Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. How's everyone doing? Okay. All right. So my other endeavor these days, as some of you may be aware, is I'm also currently a candidate for state assembly to represent District 12, which is all of Marin County and Southern Sonoma County. So I appreciate kind of being able to appear and share some time with you. My days, these days, like right before this, I was walking door to door in a precinct, and right after I'm gonna head up to a house party in Sonoma Valley. But with 2 weeks to go in the election, right, everyone get out and vote on November 8th. But that's been a great experience as well for about the past year. As was mentioned, it's been really gratifying to be a local public servant for the last 18 years, including school board, city council, and for the past 8 years, one of the county supervisors here in Marin County. In fact, we're in my district here, which is Greater San Rafael. It's been a great, rewarding experience, and I think the theme you'll hear me go back to today is just how important the grand jury has been as part of that process. Frankly, taking a broader perspective on it, really, to democracy itself. It was interesting, I was walking door to door in Cotati recently, and I came across a woman who may even be here today. I don't know, Bonnie, she met, yeah, hey, how are you? Good to see you. And we really were small world, I think that qualifies. And we were talking about participatory democracy, right, where ordinary citizens step up because they're interested in ensuring that government runs well, that they care about their communities. Perhaps running for office isn't necessarily their bag, but nonetheless, being a public servant in the truest sense of the word, and I think that's what you all reflect here today. So as I reflect on my years of service on the Board of Supervisors, I feel fortunate to be able to work with so many community members, including many of our local esteemed grand jurors here. Is Larry Bauer here as well?
No, Larry couldn't make it. He's on a family trip.
Okay, great. I'll refer to him a couple times. Jack Nixon and others have really been getting it done. We have a very active alumni movement here, as I know do many communities. I've had the privilege of speaking with them many times. A big issue, of course, is recruitment and ensuring that we have the folks willing to step up. We'll talk about that a little bit today as well. But truly, the civil grand jury is one of the most engaged groups doing the work needed to move the needle on issues. So we've accomplished a lot together, and this cuts across not only my work on the County Board of Supervisors, my assembly campaign, but really the work we've seen with our grand juries of late on the key issues facing our communities locally and frankly statewide right now: homelessness, mental health, housing, transportation, all the easy issues, right? Protecting our environment and promoting county resiliency and preparedness. The issues are oftentimes complex, resource-constrained, and emotional. So really, having trusted community members serve to provide the oversight that you do for local government is a key part of maintaining public trust at the heart of it. Our civil grand jury serves as our public watchdog agency, keeping a watchful eye over the public's business. And I may note, for those who don't know, and I did a little bit of research, the grand jury has an interesting place in history. I'm a bit of a history buff. So just to touch on that for a sec. In fact, the grand jury is a major institution with deep roots in American history. The grand jury originated in 12th century England. Stop me if you guys already know this, but I find it fascinating. Here on a Sunday afternoon, based on the idea of protecting citizens from abuses of power, and through the time since the monarchy, this mission has remained relatively consistent. We're still talking about it. In the American colonies, these bodies were a rare opportunity for representative government back in the day, and at times acted as local elected assemblies. After independence and as the nation spread west, this function carried over to frontier states that didn't have government systems set up. Initially in the United States, a grand jury served the key legal purpose of indicting the accused, along with investigating and reporting on public systems and concerns. In more recent times, grand juries in California have focused their efforts on their duties as civic watchdogs. Legislation over the years has identified specific duties of the grand jury, such as investigating the status of prisons, auditing the books of cities and counties, and investigating other special government agencies and districts. Along the way, certain grand jury reports have made historic impacts. Christopher Buckley, or Blind Boss Buckley, as he was known, was a Democratic Party boss in San Francisco, whose only public office was a saloon that he kept. He directed fraud, patronage, and dictated municipal government for the benefit of his interests, the so-called machine men. An 1890 report pointed out the corruption and fraud of city officials at the cost of the taxpayer. The results were so widespread that Blind Boss Buckley attempted to plant members on future grand juries, which failed, further setting the courts and judges against him. The report spawned years of scrutiny and investigation and was cited as one of the first comprehensive searches under forms of law into the type of municipal dishonesty known as grafting. A lot has changed, I hope, since the days of Blind Boss Buckley, I think so. But the civil grand jury's role as a watchdog group is not, if anything, it's as strong. Today we work with the community to outreach for potential jurors. Judges interview candidates and 30 are nominated here in Marin, then 19 are drawn at random. At the beginning of the year, the grand jury develops a list of potential topics. They then divide into groups to explore these topics and determine which merits a report. And what I really like is our grand jury, and I assume this is the best practice, reaches out to Board of Supervisors members, other community members with subject matter expertise on topics of interest to the jurors themselves, and we brainstorm about those. Each year is different depending on how many topics the grand jury wants to explore. We have responded to about 12 to 13 reports or 5 to 8 reports per year. Each report covers important topics. The grand jury recently covered issues like opioid misuse, a huge local and nationwide issue, evacuations for wildfires, firearm safety, mental health in schools, climate change, cyber attacks, web transparency of agency compensation practices, and a comprehensive list of Marin's public agencies, homelessness, and law enforcement oversight. In order to develop the subject matter expertise and untangle these complex issues, as I mentioned, the grand jury meets with staff, oftentimes department heads, and conducts confidential interviews. For instance, staff from our county administrator's office consistently meets with members of the grand jury on dozens of topics regularly. When a report is prepared, the agency has a chance to review it before it goes public, seek clarification or correct factual errors, and avoid derailing the entire process. County responses are coordinated by the county administrator's office. They will work with each internal department and prepare a report for the Board of Supervisors. We take this very seriously. Once a report is completed, the Board of Supervisors must provide a response, and that's by law. I shared earlier, the issues are oftentimes complex, resource constrained, and emotional. They are, however, important to examine and address, which is why our responses to the reports can be challenging for the public, and we'll talk about that a little bit. There are strict laws that govern how public agencies respond to these reports. These mandated responses may give the appearance of perfunctory analysis, but they demonstrate that these issues are not black and white. Moreover, the required format of responses creates issues regarding whether or not there is an adequate response or the seriousness of the response. I'm sure you've run into this. For findings, and this is by statute, the respondent either one, agrees with the finding, or two, disagrees wholly or partially with the findings, in which case the respondent shall specify the portion of the finding that is disputed and shall include an explanation of the reasons therefore, quote unquote. So one example where this came into play, and I think it's a prime example of how this work of the civil grand jury moved the ball on an important issue, and that was around county governance and the structure of that. It was a program called Managing for Results. It's a good example of a report that elicited a nuanced response from the county, where the county agreed with certain findings and recommendations and disagreed with others, and of course, all within that wording that we have to work with by statute, which is awkward at best at times. MFR, or Managing for Results, is a framework for evaluating county work and priorities against key missions, attaching quantitative measures to these missions. It was a program that we unveiled several years ago. So grand jury finding was department managers are not using MFR metrics as an integral part of a continuous improvement activity, so some criticism. A majority of department metrics show little or no history of improvement. Ouch. We agree. The response was, while some departments are using the MFR program more effectively than others, generally speaking, the majority of departments are not using metrics as an integral part of continuous improvement activity. As part of our MFR reboot effort, we want to work with departments to eliminate measures that do not add value to their internal operations or communicate to the public whether or how successfully their programs operate over time. Again, I'd like to think that this kind of internal review would happen in the ordinary course, but let's face it, having the grand jury bring up these legitimate criticisms with suggestions is very helpful. Additional finding, the Board of Supervisors has not utilized the MFR program to improve Marin County services. In that case, we disagree and said, the MFR program is broader than simply performance metrics. The county has improved services and cost effectiveness using the greater lens. For example, as a result of our long-term restructuring, we are saving taxpayers over $800,000 every year because of our analysis, which led to the consolidation of our financial offices, coroner operations, and mediation services. Etc. This is an example of how meaningful and thoughtful input is evaluated and leads to an iterative process. Again, not fully agreeing necessarily, but moving in the right direction. The grand jury put the wheels in motion. In fiscal year 2018-19, the county shared a report, and this was after the grand jury, titled Managing for Results, Draft Performance Plans, Putting Departments to Task with Setting Clear Goals and Metrics. And again, Larry Bauer in particular was very involved in this. I met with him frequently. We are continuing that work today, and again, thank you to our jury, and emphasizing the importance of transparency and results-based accountability. So oftentimes much is made, and again, part of it is that almost stilted structure of the responses. But part of it is we're not always going to agree, right? And really the assurance I'm providing is we are giving everything coming out of the grand jury a fair look and taking it seriously, as an example I just cited. But ultimately, my job as a member of the Board of Supervisors is to exercise independent judgment in making decisions on issues on behalf of the people I represent. It would not be appropriate for me and my colleagues as elected officials to accept every recommended action without evaluation. I'm sure you understand that. The grand jury provides an extremely valuable perspective, but that perspective must be weighed against the highest and best use of resources, in our judgment, for the public good, among all other challenges and public priorities that make governing such a balancing act. The county must be expected to be diligent in critically evaluating reports from the grand jury and be held accountable. From that perspective, responding critically to grand jury findings certainly is not inappropriate. I would say it's part of our function as well. The grand jury's credibility stems from the seriousness with which members approach the job. We rely on dedicated, civic-minded individuals who offer a significant amount of time and a portion of their lives to address important topics, conduct research, and interview in an unbiased manner to improve our society. We are fortunate, as I mentioned earlier, to have a wealth of educated professionals, lawyers, doctors, and business leaders who serve on our grand jury. But here's another issue. I know you're well aware of it. Critically important is ensuring that our grand juries are demographically representative of the community, and that they hold diverse professional, academic, and lived experiences. The need for diversity and lived experience is key. As much as relatively it's easy to perform this role when you're retired or otherwise plugged in, I think it's incumbent on all of us to keep those principles in mind and try to attract and retain a broader grand jury pool. This issue was recently taken up at the legislature through AB 1972. The bill sought to amend statutory requirements to include gender, age, race, and ethnicity to impaneling judges to improve diversity within the grand jury selection process. That bill it passed the assembly, but then did not go forward through the Senate. But nonetheless, we need to continue to work to ensure we have all voices at the table. The grand jury brings to the public eye an important perspective that moves the conversations forward and leads to action. I want to give one more example of that. It's probably one of our most noteworthy examples here in our county, and that is on the issue of homelessness. In 2015, the grand jury submitted a report on homelessness titled, quote, "Homelessness in Marin, A Call for Leadership," end quote. The report found, as finding one, there's no coordinated, focused, systemic plan with a comprehensive budget to eliminate homelessness in Marin County. The county disagreed with that finding and referenced a 10-year plan to end homelessness and cited the continuum of care, which is comprised of county and city government leaders, homeless and housing service provider organizations, consumer representatives, local businesses, and other stakeholders. Finding three was the funds Marin County reports spending on homelessness are not in a comprehensive budget, making it impossible for the public to know how and what funds are being spent to address homelessness. We agree with that. Finding four, decisions about expenditures for the homeless are often reactive to government mandates or political pressure. Again, partially disagree. And finding five, the majority of the homeless in Marin County are centered in Santa Fe, which negatively impacts business activity and the overall quality of life in that community. Partially disagree. A few more key findings and then we'll talk about the relevance. Finding six, the majority of the homeless services in Marin County services are also located in San Rafael, prompting other towns to direct the homeless to those services. Partially disagree. Finding seven, the total economic impact of homelessness in Marin County is not known, including the impact on business activity and the cost of public safety services, making it impossible for the public to know that the full economic impact is significantly greater than perceived. We agreed with that. And finally, finding eight, multiple public agencies in Marin County interact with the homeless regularly, but do not participate in the collaboration on homelessness, so their valuable experience is not part of the planning. Again, partially disagree with that awkward required wording. So, despite the areas of disagreement or partial agreement, the grand jury, along with community advocacy, led to the county actually taking a new approach to address homelessness after that report came out, and with the broader backdrop of homelessness really as one of the main issues facing our communities and state. In 2017, the county adopted a housing first philosophy, mapped our system of care, and established better lines of communication throughout the continuum of care, the very issues that the grand jury identified. We treat everyone with dignity and respect, and to us that means taking a housing first approach that allows people to address their employment, health, substance use, and other underlying issues that oftentimes lead to homelessness but are difficult or near impossible to address when living on the streets. So thanks to a program called Project Home Key as an example, and again, this, you can hear the echoes from that original report. This is a statewide program that allows localities to actually purchase motels and office buildings and other facilities and repurpose them into housing for the homeless. And thanks to Project Home Key, we have acquired three sites for permanent supportive housing. The county purchased America's Best Value Inn in Corte Madera, a former motel, an office building in San Rafael, creating 62 new apartment units for the homeless. We recently started construction on the third site at 1251 South Alicia Drive in Larkspur. In many ways, kind of the best site. It's near Marin General Hospital, former office building, but we literally got about 1,000 letters, emails, phone calls in opposition. These are not without controversy as they go forward. It in fact became a moral vote for our board to unanimously approve that. In addition, this year we opened Mill Street Center 2.0, now called Jonathan's Place, for transitional housing. It includes a 40-person shelter and 32 permanent supportive housing apartments. Our landlords have been a key part of the solution through the Landlord Partnership Program. I'm happy to share that the program has close to 1,000 partnering landlords willing to take Section 8 and accept that unhoused. And it's a true partnership with the county. Coordinated entry and a housing first approach are successful, as I think the grand jury even prefaced back a few years ago. Since 2017, we have housed 527 people, our most chronic homeless, and 94% of those individuals remain housed. Since 2016, we have doubled our supply of permanent supportive housing to 643 units. And we recently launched a public data dashboard to track our efforts and ensure we are putting dollars where they need to go. Again, something the grand jury identified. There are still people experiencing homelessness in Marin. Again, this is an issue I hope to tackle at the state level on behalf of our communities. But thanks to the civic engagement of the grand jury, we are operating with a level of coordination that was unheard of in 2015. Continuing to bring a compassionate and humane approach to homelessness in Marin will require strong partnerships and community engagement. And I dare say the continued oversight and engagement of those serving on the civil grand jury. So I look forward to continuing to partner with cities to address encampments and find solutions, community members, jurors, and I trust the grand jury will continue to play a vital role in these conversations. So in closing, I just really wanted to reflect again my strong view, and I assume it's shared in this room. The grand jury plays a key role in our communities and in our democracy. Its ability to maintain and develop working relationships with community leaders, to be able to cut through politics and bureaucracies, to serve the community is critical to maintaining public trust. It's been a pleasure, really, to spend some time with you today, and I hope to open it up to questions as well. I look forward to continuing to work with and for our community and with all of you. My door is always open, and you can reach me anytime by email or phone. My email is dconnolly, C-O-N-N-O-L-L-Y, at marincounty.org, and my phone 415-473-7331. So thank you very much, and I can certainly provide links to a couple of the reports I specifically identified, namely the homelessness report, which I think really has withstood the test of time, as well as the managing for results report, which had a lot of going forward implications as well. So with that, thank you, and why don't we open it up to some questions? Yes?
In both of these cases, are you aware if there were exit interviews conducted?
Exit interviews meaning what?
Well, the Penal Code allows for very limited conversations before a report is published to validate findings with the subject of the of the investigation. So just wondering if in either of these cases you're aware that a exit interview was conducted by the grand jury with the subjects of the matter.
I'm not aware of that. I know there was interviews going on before the report, but Jack, I don't know, do you have exit interviews were conducted?
Yeah. Okay. They didn't go well.
Yes, erased from my memory.
But we had.
Okay. There's your answer. Yes.
I was very interested on the exit interview. I was thinking of asking the same question. There's a lot of skill to doing a good exit interview, as we try and train to. The question I have for you is, from your perspective, what advice would you give grand jurors as they select their topics? This is one of the difficult things because you'll often end up with 30, 40, 50 topics. And what advice would you give a grand jury on which topics they should select and investigate?
Yeah, do your homework. So I think all jurors worth their salt come in with a head of steam, right? They have certain topics that are of personal interest, or maybe the group dynamic identifies some, or maybe just there's been a need for a follow-up on a certain topic. I would recommend sitting down with the decision makers before. I've actually been in situations where, due to those kind of conversations, the relevant grand jurors take a different position or maybe shelve that for a while pending further information, or maybe start looking at it a little bit differently. So I would just say, like anything in life, don't assume you've got all the facts or the perspectives. And again, I think our grand jury of recent years during my tenure has been good about that, where they may even think twice about doing a subject, or may treat it a little bit differently than perhaps they thought going in. The other advice I would give is, and this goes back to maybe that kind of just we're all constrained by the statutory framework to some extent. Don't assume just because the Board of Supervisors is disagreeing that were just, you know, throwing your work in the circular file, so to speak. It is meaningful, and oftentimes we're frustrated by what the heck does partially disagree mean, right? So, exactly.
Right, I'm curious about a couple of things with your housing. First of all, how do people get in? Are they screened? Drugs? Can they bring pets? What are the requirements to be eligible?
Yeah.
And then secondly, the other part of the question I have is, how do you control damage to property? What do you do to prevent it when there is damage? Taxpayers pay it, or what?
Yeah.
How does it work?
Great questions in both accounts. So I'll take the second one first. The landlord partnership anticipates that issue. What we were finding was a lot of landlords were hesitant to take Section 8 tenants, including those who might be homeless, because they were fearful of damage to the units. And the research we found was that in the vast majority of cases, that was not true. So it was a perception problem. So what we did with the landlord partnership was effectively offer the landlords a business proposition. If you step up and accept Section 8 vouchers and you do have damage, we'll cover it. So it was effectively like a risk pool. And what we found, and we also actually offered landlords that if you participate, you want to upgrade your unit, we'll provide you with no interest loans to do so. And sure enough, so one of my proudest things, because I was kind of spearheading this effort with our housing authority, it's a program now that's been looked at even certainly statewide, nationwide even, the Marin Landlord Partnership. We found that sure enough, we had the money because it wasn't being, it did not have to be used that much. There was not that much damage to units. And in fact, most of the money was being utilized for these no interest loans for landlords to step up and improve their properties. So I think that was part of it, you know, just overcoming those fears, if you will. And that program is alive and well now. So in terms of screening, on a Housing First model, you don't have to get clean or sober to participate. So the old model was, literally, you started in shelter. If you got clean, you could then, you know, upgrade or transition to permanent housing. The Housing First model starts with the proposition that people need to have a roof over their head and they need wraparound services. So a key part of Housing First is that the services need to be available and the people in the program need to be. From the resident standpoint, and this was the issue with the Larkspur project, there are concerns. Are you dropping a population in the middle of an area, albeit next to a hospital, but it also there's a path, you know, within a certain distance, or further yet, some schools, you know, so are kids going to be walking by? What's the safety protocol? All that. So this also happened in Corte Madera. The initial pushback against converting that motel was same thing. You know, were kids going to be walking by? Was it going to just be rampant drug use and crime and debauchery? The residents in that case came around. The city did a great job of even forming a residents council in connection with that project, and they ended up being the advocates for it. In Larkspur, we're kind of getting there. The city is now on board. There is a residence council. There's a robust public safety plan with it. And I think we've alleviated a lot of the concerns. Some still exist. Some folks are just never gonna accept that there should be a homeless facility anywhere, or maybe put it way out in the middle of nowhere. The key with this philosophy is roof over one's head, services, including mental health. We know almost invariably now our most chronic people that are on the street also suffer from very serious mental health issues and or substance use issues. We're seeing the proliferation of encampments. In my district, for example, there was a major encampment under the freeway. I mean, no one should be living under a freeway or in a public park or famously in the case of Sausalito on a tennis court. We need to, on one hand, retake those public spaces, but on the other hand, do it in a compassionate way, providing people with housing and services. So firm, yet compassionate. So I'm a fan of Project Home Key, but to make it work, albeit not with kind of preconditions, you don't have to be sober before you get a roof over your head. There has to be services. There's a tie-in now, interestingly, and this, maybe the grand jury will delve into this, the CARE Corps, right, which Governor Newsom is proposing. I personally would have voted for that. It's a way of getting some of our most severe chronic cases on the street before a judge, if they're not taking their medications, for example, and seeking to create a program for them. I was a fan of Laura's Law when that came up. This takes it a little bit further with CARICORD. So I think there are a number of policy issues we're going to have to continue to evaluate. Conservatorships, laws around that, the role of courts, of course, with the backdrop of making sure civil liberties are protected, but also at the heart of it, it's housing and services as well.
Yes. Currently, compensation for grand jurors is somewhere in the range of 10 to 20 bucks an hour. The legislation that you referenced in your speech, thank you. Oh, I would be paid per hour.
By the way, I was on an actual criminal jury.
Anyway, back to the deal. In other words, it's relatively low. It's in the neighborhood of 20 bucks a day. The legislation that you referenced envisioned the possibility of substantially increasing that. I think as an effort to try to improve diversification and make it possible for people, more people to participate. What are your thoughts with regard to that? That legislation has gone or passed, that will probably come back in some form. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, no, I would support that. So one reason I brought up that legislation, I would be interested in working on that legislation again. So let's keep in touch on that and any ideas you have. I'm not sure why it stalled out. Maybe someone has an idea on the inner workings here. But it looks like it got buried in the Senate. In the suspense file, they call it. The graveyard of bills. But it passed the assembly, so maybe we can get it going. I can work with that author and see what's going on. Yeah.
Actually, on that, one of our former grand jurors in Solano is still testifying before the Senate on what's going on with that and whether that should go through. So,
okay, I'll make a note of that.
But I was interested, you sort of glossed over it or passed it or whatever. She did ask about people that have pets, homeless people that have pets, what their availability for housing is, because, you know, in some cases, pets can be very important
right. To
all of us. And also, I'm interested to know if any of this addresses homeless teens, because their kids that, for various reasons, get kicked out of their homes. What, if anything, is being done for them?
Yeah, so on the pet issue, I don't have a specific answer. I could find out, maybe even like the Larkspur case, because I understand the importance of pets. I assume they're allowed. I haven't heard anything to the contrary, but I can track that down. On students, you're absolutely right. So there, we've been working closely with school districts. A lot of students couch surf, as an example, and obviously it's not ideal to try to be learning while you're homeless. In effect, our family's precariously housed. A pandemic opened up a whole new scenario with a lot of this, am I right? I mean, that my job effectively over the last several years has been providing community responses to families and individuals in crisis, whether it's eviction, moratoria, rent stabilization, finding emergency housing, food. That was kind of our reality every day during the pandemic. And there may even be some sort of, I don't know if a grand jury is going to do it at some point, just kind of what went right, what went wrong with that. But in terms of young people in particular, foster youth, I know there's been some legislation to smooth that transition. For a while, once they hit the magic age, they were just out of the system, right, and oftentimes homeless. So that seems to be changing. And then I think working closely with our education system and families is a part of that as well, which we're kind of doing locally. Yes, Jeff?
The rising interest in democracy or its demise has given cause for me to certainly think that the grand jury is extremely important in the democratic process. However, the problem we're faced with now is one, for lack of a better word, of diversification. And it was to that extent that AB 1972 was promulgated, but I think it's a very poorly worded bill. And I don't know how you can pay people or choose people to serve on the grand jury and still consider it a democratic process. Would you like to comment on that?
I haven't read all the details of the bill. Needless to say, there's some reason it didn't go forward, so it may need to be improved or rethought. There's always a fine line of promoting diversity, but not running afoul of the Constitution and laws. So I think we always have to be, I'm a lawyer as well, so I fully get that dichotomy as well. So is there anything more specific you were referring to?
Well, you could tell us how we could create some diversification on the grand juries. I don't know.
I'm all ears. just maybe it's higher pay. Structuring it differently where you don't have to be retired. I'm totally open. That's part of the legislative process. I don't have all the answers. I'm going to be taking input and let's figure out what was wrong with that bill. Obviously it didn't pass. I think it has the seeds of a couple issues we're talking about today,
yeah,
including pay.
Well, I agree with you that there's no easy answer.
But it's pretty noteworthy that I think we do need a broader pool. I'm not seeing any disagreement.
Yeah.
All right, that's a start.
First off, I wanted to respond on the diversity issue. My first year in 1920, it was a very diverse group.
2019.
What
county are you from?
Yeah, Sonoma.
All right.
I'm really old. There was a lot of diversity in the
court. Okay, great.
Of that 30.
Yeah.
But when they pulled the names, there was no diversity. So that kind of
it's not that we're not trying to get diverse groups, it just happens. But my question really for you is, as a board of supervisor, we issue reports to you every year for the county departments. What type of buy-in are you trying to get from the county department heads to really embrace what the grand jury is saying, especially when sometimes it's negative? There are also positive. The following year, we do a continuity report, but we don't really get to see, other than what your responses to us are, what's happening. Is it really getting done? So right. What do you do as a board of supervisor with the department heads to ensure that?
So we work with our county, we work directly with county department heads in our system, at least here in Marin, but we also have a county administrator that we utilize as a resource. And he's been fantastic in with his office and kind of taking the lead. But in our structure, department heads report directly to us, which I kind of like. So for example, in the case of the homelessness, grand jury report, we work directly with the head of HHS on that, as well as our CAO. On managing for results, it was primarily through the CAO. But the way it happened is, as I alluded to, after that, there was a follow-up county report and effort as part of our budget process where each department actually had to report back on implementation of MFR. So that was almost an extreme example of where it filtered back to the departments. Jack, I'm trying to think of some other recent examples of note of grandeur. I think mental health in the jail, there was at least one or two reports. That's been a huge issue of mine, and our strategy there has been to actually convene a larger group of criminal justice partners. We have quarterly meetings where that has been one topic of many. So it's DA, public defender, sheriff, health and human services, behavioral health. And I'm proud to report that Marin actually was awarded, recognized nationally for its work as a Stepping Up County, which is a national program to improve mental health in jail. So that's another thing I've kind of been leading on. So it's really synergistic, right? I mean, it's just when you may think, hey, they're not listening, well, we're on it. Right, and I think the grand jury has been helpful in that regard.
I just wanted to share that the current budget for the grand jury in Marin County, the Marin County District Attorney's Office that oversees it, approved two scholarship stipends for those qualified representing the underrepresented populations. It's just a beginning, but we're starting to use that. Obviously, for particularly that type of population, they need a little more income to be able to put this much time in. So there is now two slots, and we're going to, you know, start to use that as a possibility of diversifying the grand jury with help from the Marin County District Attorney's Office. Just want to add that.
That sounds great.
I just wanted to point out one of the reports that I thought that you could comment on was the report on from Marin on the fire district and how to form a JPA to combine and coordinate all firefighting and fire prevention efforts. And then the other point I wanted to make is that you will note on our program, we have a specific topic on how to diversify grand juries. And we are a source of a lot of good information, and I'm glad to hear that you will look to us to give you good input on any future legislation, because we do have a lot of knowledge that could be helpful.
All right, well, let's plan on that, because that's really good to know. And on your other question, I'm not specifically recalling the details of that report. However, that is an important issue that there is buy-in on. I agree that, at least in Marin County, we should consolidate all the fire service into one agency. I don't even think it's that controversial anymore. fire agencies are doing that in certain regions of the county. The most recent example, which was not too long ago, or may even be happening now, is Mill Valley and Southern Marin Fire, which itself is an amalgamation of former agencies. Marinwood and San Rafael is another example. Sonoma County, I know a hot topic up there is school districts. I don't know where things stand. And then the other issue with fire agencies in Sonoma County is volunteer fire departments versus more traditional. So there's a lot of ways to slice the issue you're raising. I think it may depend on the county, but in Marin County, I think there is an ultimate movement toward fire consolidation. Now, why we need, like, God knows how many sanitation agencies, and there's always been efforts to coordinate those, voters always reject. They like the Almonte's sanitation agency, right, and others. So it's up to the voters.
I don't mean to be argumentative. However, I think that the potential of raising enough money or having enough money, whether it's through scholarships or whatever, to offset the cost for somebody to spend the amount of time that's required to serve on the grand jury for a year, I think it's not out there. I mean, you look at how much money it costs to live in any of our areas, and how are you going to compensate folks in order to be, I mean, that's giving them a living wage for a year. Is that really realistic? And I think what the issue or the measure that was being proposed was very, very underestimated.
Okay, that. Okay. Good to know. And how much time does it take? Like, can you be on the grand jury and have a job for that year?
Depends.
You can or can't? You cannot. This, okay. I mean, I didn't know.
Depends on who you are.
Yeah. I'm learning here today.
How fast you talk, how fast you think.
Thank you even more if that's the amount of time you're putting in.
The last 2 years with a bunch of young people, but it was a struggle for them.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Yeah, we'll continue to sort through those issues, and obviously any legislation has to be meaningful. So let's continue to interact on that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Get out of this time and go talk to a house party in Oakmont.
You're the only one with a tie.
That's true.
All right.
Submitted position papers to the Public Safety Committee, the Appropriations Committee, and the Judiciary Committees of the California Senate. We know why the bill was dropped. The bill was dropped because the legislative term came to a close, but it was the collective action of the CGGA, Legal and Legislative Resources Committee, headed by Karen Char, and those members taking an active role to stop a bill that was not necessarily to the benefit of the grand jury system. So thank you all for your effort. If it comes back, we've now got a new contact that we can send our position paper to, and hopefully it'll be made more appropriate. So, as outgoing president, I would like to appeal to you and the chapters and the chapter members. About 4 years ago, when Larry Herbst became president, we